Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Kerry Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro. That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's all. You ain't heard about. Then we're about to let you know. Cause you know it's on. It's on. Cause you know it's on.
We got a special guest today. You know, some people say he's a return specialist. As a former wide receiver, I would say he is a corner that is very much always in your pocket, right? Nicknamed Sweet Pea, but here in North Carolina. And near South Carolina, they sometimes get it twisted with USC. He's from the real USC, University of Southern California. Welcome to the Cut to a Podcast, Adoree Jackson.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. Appreciate that.
Welcome, man. Welcome.
Appreciate y'all having me on this thing, man.
Man, appreciate it. I think this is the first time I realized it, and maybe it's just the camera. You kind of got the Kendrick Lamar look going on, or does Kendrick look like you? You know you ain't the first time you heard that.
Nah, I might say he could be a cousin. He could be one of my cousins, probably. You know what I'm saying? We probably a little relative somewhere down that line.
Good Kid, Mad City. I ain't mad at it.
Yeah.
Nah, fact that album do go crazy. Good Kid, Mad City for sure.
Yeah. Well, man, let's go ahead and get started. We just do a little icebreakers, man. Dickies. Or overalls?
I'm gonna go with some Dickies.
Yeah, see, that's that Cali right there.
Yeah,
I got me two pair just in the back of the closet, just in case.
Never know when you have to.
Yeah, you never know. You got to pull them out. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, the problem is though, what comes with those Dickies is never a good conversation.
Why?
Because that's that old Steve that's coming out. First of all, if I throw some Dickies and I'm chilling, like it's gonna be some shorts.
Yeah.
But if I throw on some Dicky pants,
all of a sudden you start hearing Rufus Records playing.
Hey,
get out the way.
Right.
if it's a car full of us with Dickies on, and we come to your house, button up, buttercup.
Easy, right.
It's gonna be a little conversation and a whole bunch.
Why they in a low ride?
Start saying your prayer.
Why they in a low
ride? Get your prayers out the way now.
Oh, man. Hey, man, what's your favorite color and why?
Oh, man, my favorite color is red. I don't know. I just grew up just liking red.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my favorite color. Okay. My family members don't like me. That's my favorite color, but I just love me some red.
All right. Since, you know, obviously we'll get into where you're from, but, you know, come from back home, man. I gotta ask you. You got three choices: Raging Waters, Magic Mountain. You're in the league now, so you can. But we're not gonna throw out the Disney. Knott's Berry Farm. Which three are you going to? Out of those three choices,
I'm gonna say Raging Waters. I'm gonna pull up the Raging Waters. Just because I used to see when I was a kid, see it on TV, not the stuff on TV, like the water parks, you go to the Disneyland, the excursions, them cruises.
Yeah.
That was the closest thing I could ever get to. to like actually be on the slide and some water, something like that. So that's probably why I would choose it, because it reminded me of that nostalgic of when I used to see that growing up, like yeah. that was the closest thing I can reach. But now it's like, as you're saying, you can obtain that now. But I say raging water is probably be the thing that I gravitate to.
You ain't been lately, huh?
Nah, I haven't been since I was young.
Yeah, it ain't as big as it was when we were young. To
right.
It's actually a little bit disappointing.
Mm, yeah. Minute, like.
Bro, it's cool. I took my kids. I talked it up. I took my kids.
They was disappointed?
Man, I was disappointed. I took them. It was probably like 7, 8. I don't know. Probably about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And talked it up, right? We was coming back home. Man, we going to Raging Waters. Man, I'm telling you, man, we got in that thing. I walked in and I was like, this it?
Time to go.
I mean, it was literally, it was like, you know how you talk about a big old mansion?
Right.
Man, it was 16,000 square feet walking that thing. It was about 864 square feet, man. As soon as I walked in, I was out.
Dang.
But it was good. It was, the kids make fun of me till this day. Is it as nice as Raging Waters, Dad?
Oh, they're going to give you a hard time for sure.
Yeah. So, but let's get into it, man. You know, tell us where you're from and the place you call your hometown.
So I grew up in Illinois, so a place called East St. Louis and Belleville. So growing up, I stayed in East St. Louis, and then I went to school out in a place called Belleville. So I went to West Haven Elementary School, Central Junior High, then went to a school called Belleville East. Mm-hmm. But after school and everything, like I was always in East St. Louis with my family, my brothers, hanging out with them. Then when I got into my sophomore year in high school, I moved out to California and went to Sarah. But I feel like East St. Louis is my home. But yeah. Then out here in California is like my home away from home. I tell people like I was born in Illinois, but I feel like I was raised because I came out here when I was 15 in LA. And so yeah, exactly.
New kid.
You literally the living embodiment of the movie The Wood. Only he was from North Carolina. Shameless.
That's what I'm saying. So it really, I seen that movie when I first got out here, and then actually living, it's like, oh damn, this is for real. So,
yeah. So which one do you rep? You rep LA, I can tell.
I do both. Like, I always go back home, but okay. I mean, you can't beat the weather out this way.
Yeah.
And everything. I went to SC, so I feel like like I said, that was where I was raised, kinda. Like that's where I met all the people that transformed my life from what I knew to get me to where I was. So they helped me and paved the way in a certain sense.
I mean, so living basically until, you know, a young teenager, you know, it shaped you. Obviously, you said it shaped you in L.A., but I'm imagining Illinois gets some credit because you never were a finished product. We're never a finished product, really, until
right.
you know, until we're in the dirt, right? Ultimately,
right.
So we're always growing and evolving. You know, some of us, not everybody, right? So that's just how it goes. But how different were the two for you? Because you were at an age, you know, like my youngest, who will be 8. You know, we live here in North Carolina, but he remembers right now, and each year goes by, he remembers less and less, but right now he still remembers Baltimore. He still has that
right.
part of his life where you can remember. I mean, technically, you're 26, 27 years old. You haven't even lived half of your life one or the other. You
right.
know, a lot of your roots, a lot of the things that make you who you are, even with going to SC, even moving to LA, a lot of it started in Illinois.
Right. So that's why I say, yeah, I feel like LA, my home away from home.
Yeah.
But like you said, like growing up, I feel like it taught me how to maneuver and how to.
What, LA or Illinois?
In Illinois. So I feel like it made life, like the transition part, a lot easier. So when I moved out there, I stayed with my sister. So my parents stayed back home. So I had to go from everything that I was raised, brought up on, learning, you know, your P's and Q's, dotting your I's, crossing your T's, the street smart part. And then when I'm out on my own somewhere else, still trying to have that and remember that. So I feel like it made the transition easier in LA, like knowing who to mess with, who not to mess with, just being able to be behind the scenes and seeing and thinking before I even speak or move. So I feel like my dad and my older brother really helped me to, I guess, grow up faster. It's like crazy. Like, they didn't know this was going to happen in my life, but at the same time, they was preparing me before I even knew this was going to happen. So when I went out there at 15, it's like, all right, I had a good understanding of, I don't say life, but knowing, I mean, it can hit you anyway, any form, but being able to have an older brother, a dad I can just call up or whatever it may be. If I feel like I'm in some trouble and need some help with something, they can help me. But saying, like, I mean, you know right from wrong. Like, we already taught you. You know what it is and what it ain't. So you can survive out that way. So them being able to trust me and think that I was responsible enough and ready enough to move to L.A., I feel like that helped me out a lot.
You've got a deep relationship with your family. Would you tell us about that bond and its importance?
Man, I just feel like, you know, watching them TV shows as a kid and actually seeing it in my household, like my mom and dad there. I got an older brother, older sister, and, you know, going to church every Sunday, even if I didn't want to, because you're a kid, you want to go hang out, do what you want to do. Like, they tell me, like, all right, you can go out, but you got to wake up in the morning. Or my friends come over, make sure they bring their church clothes. They want to stay the night. They gotta go to church. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's really how it was. And I feel like my mom instilled a lot of faith, a lot of a people person, being respectable, and treating any person like a human first and going that way. So I feel like just by having both backgrounds, my mom being from LA, you know what I'm saying? So she taught me a lot of the LA stuff, and my dad being from East St. Louis and then going out to LA and meeting my mom and then coming back to East St. Louis. So I had a little bit of best of both worlds in a sense. And I feel like just seeing them and you know, I was the youngest. So I was 7 years younger than my brother and 14 years younger than my sister. So I technically grew up pretty much like by myself. But that was when my older brother was kind of like the father figure too at the same time, even though he's my older brother, making sure I'm with him all the time and keep me right, keep me in line. So I think that's why I'm so tight with my family, because I was so young, but I always wanted to hang out with them because I didn't want to hang out with nobody else, because that's all I knew. So just as sports growing up, we're trying to hang out with my brother. I'm 7, he's 14, trying to play sports with him. Or if my sister was doing something when she was in college, I'm trying to hang out with the older guys who 18, 19 years old. So just them showing me the ropes and being loving and treating me the way that they treated me, I think that's what made us so close to this day.
Oh, just that old soul.
Yeah.
What was your dad like as a father? You know, that, and how did he impact you just individually as a, you know, as a man you are today now?
Man, super strict, but.
Strict though? Give us a little.
Don't understand that until later. You know what I'm saying? Like, I even
give us detail on super strict.
Because he was cool though. Like, everybody, you know, I had the type of dad where everybody loved my dad. But as a kid, it's my dad though. So I'm like, man, y'all don't know my dad like I know my dad. You know what I'm saying? So, but as I got older, and obviously when I moved away, and it's like, man, all those lessons you taught me at a young age, like, I made it to understand it now. But when I'm able to maneuver and do what I got to do, it's like, oh, this is what you meant by that. He's always be like, anything that you've done, I probably did before. So don't think you slick, this, that, and the third. Yeah. Saying, I don't want you to follow the same steps or mistakes that I made. So he let me do what I wanted to do. But at the same time, before I even had to make a decision, it was like, all right, I know the path and which ways it can go, and trying to figure it out. Obviously, you know, being anointed and having the blessings of the Lord be able to protect me at all times. Because, you know, like I say, anything can go south at any given time. But I feel like my dad was just an old school dad, like you said, an old soul, and it was on me tough, but he wanted the best for me. So, you know, always at all the games, always making sure that he was there for me when I needed, taking me to practices, in the backyard with me. If y'all know, like, he barbecues all the time, but that started when I was in Pop Warner. So my first ever Pop Warner season, he'll put the barbecue grill on the back of the truck, and we going to the games, away, home, and he barbecuing. So I think just him, I don't want to say living the same dream together. Like, obviously, he never forced me to do anything, but it was me forcing him. Like, when I wanted to play football, I used to tell him all the time for like 6 months. And then I finally found out I was serious about it, and he finally put me in the football. So it was never him forcing me. It was always him letting me make my own decisions. And he used to always say, well, I was just waiting on you to tell me something. So that's how I learned at a young age. Like, it's really about what I want to do and how I want to go about it. And he was going to support me no matter what decision I went with.
So with your dad, you know, barbecuing, I'm assuming he had a business, right? Mm-hmm. Man, take us through that, you know, with your dad, you know, being a cook and just going through that as a young man, I would imagine it did have an impact on you a little bit, right?
Yeah, I didn't really understand the sense of, like, I was with my dad, like, 24-7. So it was from the sense where, like, we'll go pick up the spices. He make his own spices. So we'll drive all the way to St. Louis, go to this place called Sous Lord, get all the spices. We go to Restaurant Depot, get all the different stuff that he need for that. Mm-hmm. He make his own barbecue sauce. So it was actually me just seeing the ropes and seeing how everything is done. And, I mean, that's my first person that probably showed me, like, how to get to it, like how to hustle and make money. So seeing his drive and seeing how hard he worked, not just at his regular job, but just trying to serve people, that's just what he loved to do, a people person. So I feel like that was one of the things that I gravitated to the most. Like, although I thought he was super strict, man, he was a good dude at heart. And everything that he did was for a reason and for a purpose, whether you knew it or not. But at the end of the day, you can see the other people, like, impacted by it and affected by the things and decisions he made. So that barbecue thing was cool because if somebody else's dad wasn't there, like, he can be like that father figure, somebody else barbecuing, making them laugh, joking and stuff like that, and everybody having a good time. So I feel like that was like the glue. You know, all my teams that we played with, everybody was like family oriented, and I appreciated that.
Favorite dish or favorite barbecue?
I wasn't gonna say.
Yo, what's your favorite meal? You know, pops can get down with.
So he makes turkey legs. Like, probably everybody go to Turkey Leg Cut or go to Disney World, get a turkey leg. That's pretty good. Play a thing called Mossy Choli that he makes. It's kind of like
who?
Zanya, but it's really you said who?
Yeah. What was it? I've got the turkey leg.
Oh, Mossy Choli is like a kind of pasta dish. It's like, yeah, I don't know how to explain it, but it's fire. He's off the chain. I love his chicken wings. He make riblets, turkey ribs. I mean, the whole shebang. But anytime he barbecue, growing up,
Wait.
I've heard of turkey. I've never had them.
I've never had turkey. Yeah.
We're gonna have to get you some.
Yeah,
turkey
ribs.
I've never had it.
I seen your face. I'm like, yeah, he ain't never tapped in with that.
I saw it in my peripheral.
Look, slid that up in there. Quail, like, whoa.
Yeah, I've heard of it done.
I was dissected a turkey. You know, I was like, I done seen a turkey.
Turkey's ribs.
Yeah, I done seen a turkey. There was some baby backs right there.
But yeah, he throw anything on the grill, man. That's one of the cool things about it. He wouldn't even tell me what it was though. Like, yeah. I just, hey, try this real quick. I'll try it. Oh, that was probably rabbit. That was deer. That might have been the squirrel. Oh, this is some shark. Oh, this alligator. So at the end of the day, I might not know
anything.
I don't want no squirrel or no shark, though.
Man, anything can get work on this grill.
Nah,
right here.
You go.
I want that squirrel or rabbit, though.
This thing can work.
We going to get you right, though. We going to get you right.
My tummy ain't thinking of rabbit.
We're gonna just say it's chicken. You go, okay.
Yeah, no.
It do taste like chicken.
Yeah. No. I'm not sure. I done had duck, but I haven't had rabbit. I done had
what's the difference? One of them swim, one of them don't. One got feathers, one got a foot.
It's a huge difference in my opinion. Yeah. So you move out to LA. Take us through that transition. You know, how'd you come to the conclusion to move to LA and the reasons why?
Man, crazy story. I was my eighth grade year, I long jumped 21-11. And so somebody was talking. My brother-in-law was talking to this coach at Sarah at the time, which the high school I went to. And he was like, man, you know, my brother, when my freshman year go by, I went 23-11. So my freshman year, he's like, oh, I got it. My little brother jumped 23-11. And the high school coach was like, nah, you lying. Maybe 20 feet, 3 inches or 20 feet, 11 inches, not no 23-11. And he was like, all right, let me meet the kid. And I grew up a huge SC fan. And so my brother-in-law was like, yeah, let's go to this SC camp. So I'm like, all right, that ain't nothing. Like, I'll go to the SC camp. That's cool. So I go out there. I perform. And he's asking me where I was from. I'm like, oh, I'm from Illinois. And the guy, his name Coach Biggs, that trains me still to this day, was my long jump coach in high school. And he, you know, took me to Sarah. I was like, yeah, let's go. You know, walk around, see all this, and think about transferring. In my mind, I'm like, I'm not coming out here. Like, my parents stay back home. This don't even make sense. But, you know, I'm just good sport, following the dude. We'll be like, all right, that's cool, that's cool. This was in June. A month go by, I go back home.
I'm actually at my football camp at the high school that I'm supposed to be attending, getting ready. We just had camp. They called my dad. The school was like, yeah, your son's supposed to transfer. So I just remember him, my dad. I remember like yesterday, my dad voice called me, said my full name. I said, oh, damn, I must be in trouble. I never forget that. I'm laying down like on my bed and I hear him call my name. I'm like, damn, I ain't even do nothing. I was trying to think like, did I do anything?
Going through your mind like, what did I do? Or what did he find out?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I just had football camp. I'm like, we ain't do nothing crazy up there. So I'm like, all right, I walk in there. He's like, hey, why is these people calling me? That's the first thing. I'm like, why are these people calling? I'm like, fuck, I don't know who calling you. He said, nah, the school said you're supposed to transfer. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I visited there. But, I mean, I didn't think I was going to go because, shit, we stay out here. Like, there's no way that we're going to all move and go out there. And he said, okay, I'll think about it. I thought that was it. You know, 3 days later, he just told me, like, all right, pack your bags. You're going to stay with your sister. Mm-hmm. So I remember, the first night I got out there, that was the first time I was, like, homesick, being away from my family for real. Mm-hmm. Like, knowing I'll go back home, like, I can spend a night or go somewhere. I'm coming back home. It was the first time that I was there. So I stayed up all night. And I ain't gonna lie, I hated LA. I felt like it was the worst thing ever. I called my mom, my dad, so I'm like, man, I'm ready to come home. And they're like, nah, just stick it out, you know, go through it. And I think that's what made college so easier as well. Cause I was already gone from home when I was 15. Mm-hmm. But yeah, my first nights there, my first couple weeks, hated it. But meeting the guys the way I did, it's kind of like, you know, the movie The Wood. Like, they took me under their arms and was like trying to show me the ropes, like big brothers, and help me out and maneuver the different things. And so I'm like, oh, this is what you can do in LA. This is what you shouldn't do. And I remember I had my being in East St. Louis, we were in St. Louis, the Cardinals hat. So they were telling
me, it's just like that scene.
They said, nah, you can't wear that. I'm like, nah, that's where I'm from, though. They said, nah, it don't matter. Like, just don't wear that hat. I'm like, oh, okay, bad. So, yeah, they actually was cool, and I think that's what made me enjoying California more than I actually did at first.
I love Cut To It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell me if this story is correct. Juju owe you a lot. I believe y'all came in and y'all were at USC together. Juju was actually a DB in coming out of high school. And I heard the story that he realized that he wasn't going to get any run and switched to wide receiver.
Now,
you out there now. You out there.
He wanted to play both. I think he wanted to play both. But at the time, we had Sewell Cravens, a dog.
Yes.
And we had a guy named Leon McQuay. And then a dude named Quentin. He did it both right away, like both sides. And then one day he just told me, like, nah, bro, I'm just about to play receiver. And at that time, I'm like, dang, I thought we came in to play both. I didn't understand. And he's like, nah, I'm just going to play receiver. So I'm like, all right. But he started off at safety, but I think the receiver room was so
thin. Thin. Exactly. Yeah, thin.
I don't want to say given, but so thin. And I feel like he should have played safety, though.
I think it was a good move.
I loved him at safety. First time I ever seen him play safety was after we played him in high school. It was 1-3. They moved him to safety. He took them all the way to the state championship. Like, that's how he shifted him. I thought he was a good safety. Kind of reminded me of how Marquise Lee was when he played safety only and then went to receiver and then took off at SC. And I felt like he did it right, like you said. But I wish he would have played safety at least. Got a little film, knocked somebody's chin strap off.
Juju?
Juju. Oh. He had that rugby background. He had that rugby background.
Juju?
Juju.
Oh, okay. Just checking. I'm not buying, but you can try to keep selling me if you want to.
I thought in high school he was
fine. I mean, when you're going against your brothers and I don't see you know how it is on that edge. Sometimes you gotta make a business decision. Receivers make a lot of business decisions very quickly.
So what was it about USC? I know you said you were a fan, but what was it about USC that made you say yes, that you wanted to play college football there?
There's really the only school that told me that let me play offense and run track. Like, I'll never forget. Like, LSU came out, they came probably like a month before signing day. And I'm talking to the coaches, like, I really want to go to LSU. I'm like, all right, this might be it. I get to them and they say, a month before, like, oh, you can play offense, but we'll give you one play a game. And I said, all right, well, the ball might not even come to me. So I was like, I'm like, all right, that's out. And then the Florida thing was, I was going to go to Florida, try to leave high school early. Now, you can ask anybody, try to leave high school early, try to graduate early, and go to Florida. They wouldn't, like, the school didn't allow it. And I remember somebody telling me, like, yeah, man, the Florida coaches might not even be there. They might be gone. I'm thinking, like, nah, that ain't it. They probably still be there. I get to SC, four game in the season, they out.
Yeah, they were gone.
The color coach, Muschamp, and everybody get fired. Mm-hmm. And then SC thing was, I was, everybody, you talk about the connections, the relations, and everything like that. But one of my best friends, who when I first got to SC, I mean, I first got to Sarah, like, really was cool, genuine, a good dude, didn't show no hate, showed all love. And he's supposed to go to some school, but, you know, with the recruiting and everything, if you don't commit then, they're going to take it off or they pull it. And I just remember, like, all right, I wanted to go to Florida. I'm like, I don't want him to have to do what I did, because I know I was homesick going from Illinois to L.A., like, man, you could come to Florida with me, but that ain't the move. So I'm like, man, we can go to SC. Because that was probably the only other school that I was thinking about and growing up and loving them. And I feel like they showed the most love and was persistent and always seeing me consistent, even though they're down the street. But they were pretty much there every week or twice a week, just coming to kick it. And I think that was one of the selling points. Let me play offense. Let me play defense, run track full time. And, you know, let my dog come to school with me. And then everybody from my high school went there anyway. So we had Jalen Green, Olajuwon Tucker, John Houston, Deontay Burnett, me, and a dude named Jalen Jones. So we had like six people just in like a 2-year span, all go to SC. And I felt like that just made sense to be at, it felt like at home.
What's the atmosphere at USC? You know, growing up in LA and seeing SC, but also, you know, I went to Uni High School, so I was always on the campus at UCLA, right? Mm-hmm. It was just convenient. And seeing, how the campus at UCLA is, what's the difference at USC? That's one of those things when you go back, or the nostalgia of USC that is still there.
I remember seeing USC when it was the old at USC before the new John McKay Center. Like, I remember Heritage Halls, walking down the spiral tunnels, seeing everything and feeling that's my first memory of it. Like, this were Reggie, Lindell, Steve, Palmer, and all these dudes went. And I'm like, damn, okay, it's fire. And then seeing the new upgraded version, and then being a huge Marquise Lee fan, seeing him play when I went to Sarah, I'm like, damn. So many highlights, I'm like, we fire. And then seeing him at USC and win the Blinden call. So I think those things were what made it surreal. Like, I'm watching, I'm seeing somebody's footsteps doing what I was trying to do and doing at a high level. So I'm watching Marquise Lee this whole time, like, all right, he did this. Like, damn, I could do that. Let me try to do it like this. Or seeing, you know, the legends or everybody before go through it and being successful. And then just having that presence of Robert Woods was there, George Farmer. And all them coming in, chopping up with us, all them being so highly touted there, and having the rest of them, like T.J. McDonald, I can talk to him. I can talk to Nikhil Roby, Hayes Pillar, and Deion Bailey. I'm like, oh, they showing love. They cool. So I think that's one of my best memories. Like, I went to UCLA, but I ain't really know nobody as much as I knew these people there. And they just kept it real, like a big brother should. I'm like, yeah, you can do this, little bro, but I'm going to tell you, like, nah, I didn't really like that like this. But SC wasn't really fire until we start winning. Like, my first 2 years, we went to the Holiday Bowl twice. Like, people always ask, like, was SC good or how was it compared to them? Like, it wasn't even good to win to that Rose Bowl. We won like 10 in a row. So before then, SC was just like going to a regular school. Like, I didn't feel like no love, no sense of, oh, you go to USC. Obviously, I mean, it's USC, but once we started winning, it's like, damn, you get to see what USC could possibly be.
Yeah, when you're a winning team in L.A., it's the red carpet. Like, even with college, if you're winning in college, you're a big name. But if you're not, you don't.
Yesterday's
get the,
you
man, you don't get news. To cut the line. You, back, y'all in the back.
Nah, fact, we was in the back. UCLA, my first year, I'm like, I don't even know what this is about. Yeah. Like, UCLA was the team around in 2014. Like, that was the guy that had Brett Hundley, Hendricks, Miles Jack, Payton, all these guys. Ishmael. I'm like, okay, they really was them. And then, I mean, obviously we turned it around, but at one point UCLA was really running the town like that, and it sucked, but because they got one win.
Yeah, you've moved almost like a military kid, right? And now, you know, you get drafted by the Tennessee Titans. Mm-hmm. Then you become a free agent and you go to New York. Man, tell us about the transition just from SC to be drafted and then, you know, going into free agency, just that whirlwind of highs and lows, peaks and valleys in such a, you know, short career far.
I think the real I really got tested with adversity after my rookie season, because everybody on the staff got fired. And that was the first time where I had to, you know, you go to high college, oh, the coach get fired, they bring in a new staff, he bring in his guys. Yeah. When it happened at SC, Helton took over, and Helton was the one who recruited me you know, all the way through. So I never got used to it. And I never forget, I went to Houston on a team visit, and we sit down for about like an hour. So I'm talking up, watching film, chopping it. And at the end, they say, yeah, do you remember all our names? I just remember head coach, my coach, my DB coach, the DC, and the return, you know, the special teams coach. And Brable get there. And at the end of the day, I mean, it's like I had to get used to him and what he wanted and the type of player he wanted, the type of style he wanted. And as that being my first time trying to get used to it, we didn't gel. Like, it didn't mesh right. Like, my play didn't work, and the way he was coaching just didn't work for me.
Correct,
and, my third year, I played a lot better because I got more of a fucking mentality. Like, all right, man, it is what it is. Mm. Like, you understand in that sense. Then the fourth year, I ended up being hurt. Yeah. So I think, like you said, the highs and lows, man, I didn't went through it, battle it.
But what do you mean? Just go a little deeper, though, because I don't think people really understand. Like, most fans don't really understand, right? They don't look at football is a business, right? They look at it at a business when a guy leaves for more money or a guy requests a trade. But as far as the day-to-day, you saying it didn't mesh. And not going into graphic details details in a negative way, but I'm just talking about details of your mentality of when you say it doesn't mesh, you're getting paid your first-round draft pick.
Yeah, what doesn't mesh?
You know, you're getting paid. The fan will say you're getting a couple of $1 million a year.
Right.
How does that mm-hmm. not mesh? Mm-hmm. Right, you got that direct deposit, 17 weeks, you know, 225, 220, or you know, 115,000 after taxes. Like, a lot of people gonna say, man, that'll mesh for me.
And to take it a step further, why does meshing matter? What someone would ask?
Yeah,
it matters because it's your mentality. Like I said, the game is 90% mental, the other is physical. So physically, I can go out there and do what I want to do. Mentally, it's about okay. Being coached a certain way, a different scheme, a certain scheme. Now I'm playing a different scheme. Now I got to get used to, oh, man, I always play like this. And he's telling me, they're telling me, oh, you need to do it like this. And not knowing or not, I don't say not knowing, but
it's different.
Having that muscle memory of always doing something and doing it this way, playing this way, and then getting taught, try to do this way. And then trying to be more in my head about, all right, let me do what they want me to do and be right. Instead of now I'm like not playing my game. Mm. So it took me a minute. That's why I said it didn't match. And then the coaching styles of, I mean, that's just probably just how they go.
The coaching style is professional, right?
Everybody coached different.
They didn't care how you felt about their scheme. You need to do their scheme.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So if you do your own thing, it's like, all right, if it work, it work. But if it don't, then it don't. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I feel like, man, good. I mean, you're a good coach. Like, smart as hell, know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You just got to know how to coach everybody. But at the end of the day, it don't really matter. Like, I mean,
it doesn't.
It don't.
That's the part that sucks. It doesn't. Yeah. It does not matter. You can have a coach that is a brilliant coach. You can have a coach who's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It does not matter.
Don't.
And here's the worst thing you can happen. You can have a bad coach who's winning. A bad coach that's winning.
Yeah.
You have no out. When it doesn't go well, it's your fault.
Facts.
And it sucks, right?
It's like a false negative COVID test.
Exactly. Like you positive and you negative.
Right. You're still making this thing happen.
You don't have to isolate, but you got a headache and you got a cough.
Yeah.
But you got to isolate.
Yeah.
Man, which one am I?
Right.
Right.
Am I positive or negative?
Right. But people don't see the behind the scenes of that.
People don't really care. They just look at the outcome.
Oh, of course they don't care.
I mean, I wouldn't say, okay. The outcome is what matters. And when the outcome is a dub.
Then they don't care.
It's masked. Mm-hmm. It's masked.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I'm glad I went through it. Like, even when I got released, my agent, everybody was more mad than me. And I'm like, man.
You was relieved.
I was just like, all right, just give me a fresh start. And it was a crazy thing. The thing that he taught us the most is about second chances. And he's like, man, a lot of people don't get second chances. So if you do, make sure you make the most of it. Mm. And I say that all the time now. And I mean, in the day, even though we didn't mesh as a player and coach,
mm-hmm.
I mean, but as people, I can resonate with some things he's saying. So at the end of the day, like I said, I can never bash him or say anything bad. But I mean, good dude. I mean, he can coach his tail off and know he's talking about.
He just different. He got a different personality, right? You know, I'll say it. No. You won't. This is not you saying it. This is not Dory Jack saying this. Steve Smith Sr. saying it. Bill Belichick folk. I don't know why. I don't know how. But them dudes come off on their first job. They try to be Bill to the T.
Mm.
And it never works out.
Mm.
It never works out. Long term, it doesn't work out. Because they burn so many bridges with players.
I was going to ask why you thought that.
That's what I hear. It just burn. They rub players' pulse the wrong way. They do. Right? Yeah. There's not a Dory saying it. He's not laughing and confirming. Yeah. I'm just saying what I know over my 16-year experience and now, 6 years out. So, you know, what's that? 22 years of experience and hearing. The people that are under Bill Belichick learn a great deal. The unfortunate part is they try to attack coach in the same way, and it doesn't always work out that way.
Do you think they're trying to emulate the person, or are they just trying to implement the process like he did?
I think they're trying to implement the wins like Bill Belichick, and they will do whatever they believe it takes. Because Coach Josh McDaniels, what I heard what the experience was his first coaching job in Denver, and how that went down. It was just some interesting things that I've heard out of stories. Man, talk about my guy though, Dean Pease. Man, Dean Pease will put you out on that island, will he not? Wow. Dean Pease is defense coordinator. He's in Atlanta, and he was in Baltimore. He was a guy. He believes. See, that's a Belichick guy too. He believes in you're gonna earn your pay. He's like, you could be going against Jerry Rice himself in his heyday. That man is gonna put you on that island, and hope for you to play. It wants you to play man to man, and ain't nothing you could do about it. Mm. And that's as an offensive guy, seeing Dean Pease, watching him in practice, watching how he does. He really puts a lot of pressure on DBs, and it's tough. So if you don't have, you know, like Odoi says, if you don't have that mental game tightened up, well, you hell ain't gonna get it on the field with Dean Pease, the defense coordinator, because you know, explain to us what is it. I know it is. I never went into it, but what is it entail being a defender in the National Football League today? Walk us through what that is for you mentally, psychologically.
Like you said, earn your pay. As you see, you know, time, as you say, like the landlord, rent due every week. And not just every day, but every week you go out there, you got to make sure you get your pay and pay it forward. So I feel like the intel of a DB is, man, it's an eat or be eat mentality, right? Mm. Like when you came in, you trying to disrespect. And at the same time, we're not trying to get disrespected. We're trying to disrespect as well. Mm. So it's like it's a battle. It's the game within the game. Like obviously, you know, even they don't throw it your way. You break me off on the route, they don't throw it my way. You talking like shit. Yeah, even if you threw it, I'd have got you. And at the same time, I'm locking you up. Like, all right, you know I'm here. So it's at the same time, we got that. You know what I'm saying? Like
Worst thing. You know I'm here, huh? Yeah.
So it's like you just battling the game within the game, and I feel like just always being on your P's and Q's at any given moment. You never know. I mean, the read can be to the third receiver.
Yeah,
that's tipped up. Oh, okay. Who the first probably look to? You could stay right side, or if all the runs is coming to the right, and you the back side, he runs something. You got to make sure you're on it because you just never know what may happen. So I feel like the intel is just a dog mentality. Like either eat or you're gonna get eaten up.
Could do it. Could do it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not going to ask you what's the toughest receiver, but who are some corners that you watch today, right? We know Adoree Jackson. We know who you are. But who are some corners, as you evaluate yourself, you also feel like you can borrow some knowledge from, or some footwork or some techniques or a little bit of slingshotting, right?
Yeah. So my favorite one really is Verrett out in, with the 49ers. When I seen him at TCU, that was the first time. I was actually at an Oklahoma visit. And he grabbed it. Like, I looked at him like, oh, he going stupid at TCU. I'm like, what's the little TCU? And it ended up being Jason Verrett. So I've been following him ever since I was going into college and seeing him in the league.
What is it about his game, though? Yeah, what?
Man, smooth. You know, good feet, patient. Feel like he's super smooth, comfortable out there. You can just see the confidence in him when he plays. And even when he battled through injuries and be able to come back, man, you just see the dog in him. Like, this is what he do, and he built for it. So I feel like he's one of them that I really like a lot. I like Jair Alexander. He got game. I like Marshawn. We came out together. Marlon Humphreys. A lot of them pretty much my class that I watched. You got Jalen Ramsey, Pryor. I feel like that's probably four. That's five right now. That's five. I'm gonna stick with them five. And most of them kind of like my stature. Besides, Ramsey, long corner, but or Marshawn. But you got Jair, you got Verrett, Tre'Davious White. I like him too. I'm gonna just throw some more in there. I like his game.
You gave out a lot of flowers, man. But even right now, you're being looked at as a leader on your squad and in that secondary room. Now that you're looked at as being a leader, what do you consider your leadership style?
I feel like kind of much leading by example, but also if they need any questions or anything, because like I said, I've only been in the league 6 years, but been through a lot, seeing the different changes. And, just coming to New York last year, having one set of a staff and then now getting a whole different one. Like, I'm able to be like, okay, I've been through this. Like, you either can go about this the right way or the wrong way. And you can actually change your narrative. Like, JB, James Bradbury, another one that I respect his game. He said, YCYA. He said, you choose your own attitude. And at the end of the day, that makes sense. Like, you can come in and, be butthurt about the situation at hand. That it's a new staff. These coaches don't do this. These coaches don't do that. Or you can come in and work your tail off. And, things going to pay off. So that's how I pretty much try to go about it, stay positive. I understand you just don't say don't care, but then they beat you. Because if you be you, that's going to take you a long way. And if you're being you and things don't work out, you can't fault that. I mean, that's just how things go. But if you're trying to be somebody else and they'll go your way, now you got regrets. Like, oh, I should have did this. So just lead by example and just try to be that positive, affirmation for the guys.
What are some things you're excited about with the new coaching staff, obviously with, with the defense coordinator, with Wink Martindale?
Man, like you said, it's a lot of pressure on the DBs. But at the end of the day, that's what you really want. It's the test of you and how you're going to come out there and handle it. So I feel like that's what I'm most excited about, see the things that he can do, obviously seen his work in Baltimore, but to be able to have it here and actually play it is exciting. You have fun. And then, you got Dave's and they talk so much trash, but you need that. It takes the edge off. You're going somebody super serious. Now you're on eggshell, but they them. And I love that about it.
Yeah. You got a coaching staff that's not prideful in a negative way, but they're prideful. They also been around the league a long time. They all been waiting for their opportunities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to some degree, it is going to be a little bit of a challenge for the New York Giants this year because of, you know, obviously the quarterback situation. Not because I don't believe Daniel Jones can't play. I think Daniel Jones right now, this is the first time saying it, you know, and obviously I was up in New York and had opportunity to be there for a couple of days. The one interesting thing that I really felt out of Daniel Jones I think is concerning is seeing a young man who has the opportunity to play, but seeing a little bit of how and these are my words, not his, but you know, every coaching staff is different, and every good and bad habit that each of those coaching staffs have, it leaves, you know, it's like spaghetti. When you're eating spaghetti and you got a white shirt on, it will leave a stain. And you can use that spot remover, but you're not really sure how much of the stain is going to come off, right? And I think with Joe Judd, and this is me, I think Joe, in my opinion, he left a stain on Daniel, right? And it's going to be tough. Like, that team, y'all had so many good players. Y'all had some injuries. But then y'all had some players that probably shouldn't have been on the team, right? And trying to figure out who, you know, who should stay, who should go, and then you got a coaching staff who wants to win, who's used to winning. They come from Buffalo, come from Baltimore. You know, a lot of those guys, 10-plus years of winning, mm-hmm. right? And then Daboll was, you know, was in New England and a lot of different places, so he understands it. Man, what are some of the biggest challenges that you guys are going to face just – heading into the season because of knowing, one, the division you're in, the NFC East? It's a tough division.
Right.
Right? And then obviously having to combat some of the setbacks that you guys had from the previous coaching staff. That's just facts. Mm-hmm. Right? What are you optimistic about? And then what are you kind of like – you know, just kind of waiting to see how things shape up.
I think both of them are, you can put them in the same category. It's about how committed, you know, as individuals we want to be, how great do we want to be, how far do we want to go. I mean, everybody can say it at the end of the day. Yeah. It's about like, all right, when we come back July 26th, when we talk about a meeting, we have 45 days. Mm. What you did in these 45 days, just show me that you really want it and that you really – really about it. So that's really the most interesting part about this whole journey. You know, everybody, obviously we got a couple of weeks ahead because we had to come in early, but at the end of the day, it's how do you take what we done build up and try to improve on. And I think that's just being, I mean, it's kind of hard because mentally everybody don't know how to deal with that. Like, all right, we'll just let go, let loose. You know what I'm saying? Let me just be me, do what got me here. You know, I was fortunate enough to have my rookie year. I had Dick LeBeau and Sid Towns from Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah. So it's like, I didn't had heard all the stories and they tell me like, man, they get paid to make plays too. Like, it is what it is. Go out there and do your thing, be you and have fun, enjoy it. But like you said, you got a stain that you so you used to something a certain mm-hmm. way, a certain way. Like walking on eggshells when I was, you know, in Tennessee and trying to do everything perfect and do what they wanted. And it's like, it took me a minute to get that fresh air. Like, man, let me just relax and just be me and go back to having fun. Yeah. So it may take a minute. It took me, three until I left because it's something new, something fresh. And I was like, all right, I can do what I want and be me. So I feel like we just need to have that mentality of resetting. And I think that's the most exciting part about it, just resetting and coming together.
What does an off-season training look like? For, you know, I don't know what a DB does in the off season. So, you know, you're going to teach me something.
Running. We got to cover y'all all day.
What do you mean? Just running, track?
Running around.
You can do football specifics. Obviously, that's a lot of being in the weight room. But most of it is about being conditioned. Because at the end of the day, you can run a slant. A quarterback in the pocket, it don't happen. You can still run across the field or you can take it up and whatever it may be, or you run a go ball, they don't throw it to you, you come out on the sideline, and who got to run back and line up the next play? So as a DB, it's like you got to make sure that you really condition and have the, not the just physical capacity, but mentally staying aware, staying in tune of what's going on. And like I said, breathing and resetting, and like, all right, it's the next play mentality. So even when I'm working out, doing drills, lifting, whatever it may be, I may did a good bench rep on this rep, or I may did a good, you know, back foot break, caught the ball on this one. But now it's like, all right, it's the next one. But just because I did the last one good, don't mean the next one going to be good. And once you get fatigued mentally, you still got to be there and make sure you still, you know, on your P's and Q's. So I think that's really what goes into the offseason, being super conditioned and making sure you're in shape, because at the end of the day, you know, zone turning to man.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you think it's zone, but somebody in your zone, you might as well just take them. Or you playing man, you might have to take them across the field. So it's just about understanding the game within the game.
See, you do need to bench. He mentioned he want to look out for his bench press. we had this conversation a few times about why mechanically do you need as a football player the bench press. And I'm with you. I'm just messing with you.
Nah, no,
because I totally agree.
Yeah, that bench only gonna help you so long.
Yeah. it's really only the first 1 yard, because after that you can't touch with them.
Exactly.
If you miss,
what I'm saying, that's a little bit mechanical when you're jamming at the line. After that, that's it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's literally it.
I concur.
Yeah.
That's the hit or the shock of the head. That's the best way in the block.
To extend off Smitty's question that he just asked, though, how do you feel like you are evolving as a football player?
I mean, question.
You take the offseason, but how do you feel like you're evolving as a football player? And on top of that, how do you feel like you're evolving as a person?
I feel like having Jerome Henderson my first year in New York and him coming back, man, it helped me out a lot. That was really one of the things that I probably vocalized, making sure that he was able to come back.
Who's Jerome Henderson?
A DB coach.
Yeah, okay. Just making it for some people don't, you know,
right.
Some people not sure.
Yeah, so Jerome Henderson, our DB coach, and he taught me a lot my first year about, you know, splits, alignments, you know, reading things, understanding different routes, looking at the formation and different things in that sense. So I feel like, obviously, it's your first time learning, so it's like, okay, you do it, but you don't do it all the time. And then having another year around, like, okay, that's more repetition. And to be able to have him back is, you know, like a reliever. Because I mean, we could have brought another DB coach in, but in the day, he probably would have taught me something super different. Obviously, I can reach out to Rome, but it's not, you know, you got that analogy, out of sight, out of mind. It's
like,
I'm here locked in, and when I can ask him something every day, I might not, you know, you think about texting somebody, you might not do it. So I think as a player, that's how I'm evolving, just being able to talk to Rome every day, get different information, be able to help me out, and him really just – being on me tough, like I'm still a rookie, and I can appreciate that the most about and then as a person, you know, just trying to be in the moment, be present, you know, being, you know, down and out, you know, being hurt and not doing what I wanted to do when I first came in, and not saying woe is me, but kept it to myself, not really expressing it. But I feel like being able to express and let that energy go and to be able to focus and get back to what's really important and what I really love to do, which is playing ball. So I think that's how I've been, you know, evolving most as a person, and just, you know, thankful for the blessing I do have. Like, I was mad that I had messed my knee up, but, you know, I can still see, I can still talk, I can still do all these other different things. I was so focused on one thing that I wasn't really seeing the bigger picture. So, you look at the bigger picture, you miss the little things and vice versa. So just trying to stay in that moment.
Man, you get rid of you go ahead and put Tennessee, right? Being a Tennessee Titan in your rearview mirror, you don't have to cover AJ Brown anymore. And then now, you know, he right back out there, you know, going against AJ in practice a little bit, and then now having to see him twice a year, you know, being former teammates, but also just being a DB.
Right.
You know, I know something possibly went through your mind when you saw that big acquisition made by the Philadelphia Eagles.
I'm not gonna lie, I was happy for him. I was genuinely, you know, happy. Man, got what he deserved. Man, works his tail off.
Yeah.
Dog after the catch. And you know, I see him in the division now. It's like, okay, I don't want to say it wasn't exciting, but it's exciting because It's just another challenge, another task at hand. And that's pretty much, I don't want to say, I am saying that's what you want. I know as a DB, challenges. Like that's what you
like. You're not, you saying a challenge. You give, you calling it what it is. It ain't a cakewalk. You ain't like, yes, he's sorry. Yeah. Bring him on. You saying, hey, it's a challenge. You know, because you've practiced against him, you win against him, and you also know what you bring to the table. So it's two heavyweights. Mm-hmm. That's what I hear.
No, for sure. And it's just cool because, like you said, the division is tough. And that just makes it just makes it a journey. And one that I'm looking forward to be able to tell and see how it play out. You know, as you said, what you're looking forward to the most, you know, about the season is going to be about the journey and how we handle, you know, the different circumstances that we come across. So, but now seeing them get to Philly. The one I was hurt about was when JV left and went to Philly.
Yeah.
That's when I'm like, damn, all right. Cause that's my dog, man. I appreciate him a lot, but at the end of the day, happy for him to get what he, you know, get what he deserves. So.
Man, he didn't get a lot of, you know, he was in here in Carolina and I just saw a young man develop, you know, and he got better and better. And then he goes out, you know, obviously he goes out to New York, and that doesn't work out because of the brilliance of the former general manager kind of put you guys in a quandary, and you had to make some financial decisions whether people like it or disagree. You know, he's a guy that really didn't get a lot of credit. He's a hell of a DB, right? He does not PBUs.
Technique,
just he and I really believe a lot of it has to do with because he's such a quiet, he's like a quiet kid, silent assassin. But man, he was here in Carolina, and then we moved on. Man, hell of a player.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
Lunchville, bring in Lunchville, hard had to work type guy.
Yeah.
That's a great summation.
That is.
One more question for you. In our research, you're really passionate about being the hometown hero. Why is that?
Man, I left when I was 15, and you know, that's really my biggest, like everybody say, yo, why? And my motivation was, I ain't wanna go back home and people be like, damn. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really resonated with me. Like, they sent me to LA, 15. Every day I wanted to make sure I made everybody back home proud. You know, even though some people hated it or talked so much crazy stuff about it, but it made it that much more sweeter and that much more motivating to make sure I showed them, like, it wasn't just because I was here. I could do this anywhere. And I just wanted to put on a bigger stage and then let everybody know, like, guys back home. Like, we really got dogs, and all the people, you know, they just go to different cities or the ones that's the most attractive. But it's like, okay, I wanted to be the staple. Like, all right, this is what it is. I mean, we had Darius Miles to come out of there. But like Terry Beckner. Jeff Thomas.
But you're like, talking about all the guys that came out of your hometown.
St. Louis. But it's like, I wanted to make sure that they can go back and get more. And understand, like, it's a lot of talent there. And just to bring awareness to the city. So I think that's really why I grew up trying to be a hometown hero. And just being back home, everybody showing love to my dad. Like,
that's dope.
Going in the city and knowing who he is and showing him dummy love, or I can be out somewhere and they, oh, you must be, you know, Chris on. And I think that's one of the things that I wanted to do. Like, if I ever left and I come back, I'll make sure I got the same love and just trying to pay it forward and make sure the kids, you know, after me or the people that's there and know that, you know, really care about them and that they ain't forgotten.
I like that, but you know where you had to come to get right though.
You know, I tell you all the time, I tell you every time, I say, man, it would have happened, but I don't know the role that it would have went on.
I'm just messing with you, but it's different, different journeys for different people. I believe, you know, if you would have went at 10, you may not have got that opportunity, but you needed that full development from your folks to be able to handle, because LA is different, you know, it's not for everybody. Everybody in LA don't make it. It's from LA, right? So it isn't, you know, it isn't something like that. But I was just teasing. But I also think that what you said, your folks, especially, there's one last thing that I wrote down, being a people person. man, growing up, you know, growing up for even for myself, growing up in the South, and then you growing up where you grew up, and then coming to LA, it's a different mentality, man. It's not, you know, the Southern hospitality, yes, ma'am, you know, no, sir, yes, sir. That's not a staple in LA. Mm-hmm. And so when you come to LA and you're like that, it actually helps break down a little bit of barriers, because a lot of folks in LA, just kind of like in New York, man, they hustling and bustling. They, you know, they sitting on that 10 freeway, the 405. They ain't got time to be having conversations, saying yes, sir, no, sir, or thank you, being polite. It's just it isn't there. So I really believe that, you know, God was working that especially for you to have that purpose, because some people go to back home and it's just not the same. You know, mm-hmm. it just chews them up and spit them out, and they're never, they sometimes lose their identity.
Facts.
So, man, we'll appreciate your time, dog, and man, look forward to seeing, watching you make some plays, man.
Yes, sir. Best of luck this season, man.
We're gonna get y'all some rabbits, some alligators, some shark. Next time y'all look at his face. Look at Steve. Man,
now definitely tell Pops to bring us some.
We're gonna get you right.
Yeah, okay. Almost said something.
I seen your face. That's why I had to let him know. Like, no, I didn't even do it.
All right, dog. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, man. Y'all stay blessed.
All right, you too.
You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut To It. Cut To It with Steve Smith Sr., that is me, is a production of Cut To It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut To It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut To It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production coordinator Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Kerry Hilson, Adonis, mm-hmm. back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school, like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's
what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing.
This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.